ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। This evening, I plan to speak on Krishna consciousness and problems. Srila Prabhupada presented Krishna consciousness as problem solving. In many ways, Srila Prabhupada's presentation of Krishna consciousness was unorthodox. First of all, the kind of people he's in the West, the kind of people he spoke among, the very fact that he presented it in English. But even apart from that, Srila Prabhupada did not present Krishna consciousness as merely a religious process, but he wanted to relate Krishna consciousness to all facets of life and as something very practical. In a world beset with problems, if we look back, we might think that the 1960s, when Srila Prabhupada started preaching Krishna consciousness in America, it was much more peaceful than now. In fact, I saw in some newspaper in England, someone writing about being raised in the 60s and 70s in England, and it was as if it was a very quaint and innocent time, although I don't remember it like that. But compared to nowadays, that very turbulent time appears to be quaint and innocent. It wasn't quaint or innocent, but it might appear like that compared to today. You know, because the problems have so much increased. That the present time will be one of problems is already predicted in Srimad Bhagavatam and many other Vedic literatures also. That Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, one of them being that people leave their cell phones on during class. I forgot to say that. There you go. Evidence. So please turn off your cell phones, or if that's too much austerity to ask for, please put it in silent mode. So this world is full of numerous problems. We're ruled by people who are described in Bhagavatam as Prajaste Bhakshayanti Mlecha Rajanyarupina. Persons who are mlechas, the lowest kind of people, they take the position of kings or leaders, and their business is to devour the citizens, to exploit them. And there are many other problems described in Srimad Bhagavatam, many of which people today would not think are problems. They just think, well, that's just, it's life is better like that. Vitamaeva kalonrinam guna chara guno. What is that? That in Kali Yuga, if one has money, then he's considered to be very high class and gentlemanly, and money means you get justice. Wait a minute. Justice is supposed to be an independent principle, but and the modern definition of justice means if you have money, you get justice. And if you don't, then you're condemned. So there are many, many symptoms. In Kali Yuga, marriage, if there is such a thing, is based on physical attraction only. One will be considered manly or womanly based on their sexual attraction. And the list goes on and on and on and on. So Srila Prabhupada, he presented Krishna consciousness as something practically meant to improve the world. People often say, well, religion, that's just something, you know. It's some kind of insurance for something. You don't know what's going to happen anyway. They say that after death, you can go to heaven or whatever, but it's just wishful thinking. We want to see something practical here now. As Srila Prabhupada often gave the example that in the Soviet Union, when the Bolshevik Revolution was going on, the people were very religious. So at that time there was a shortage of food, and the Bolsheviks or the communists, they would come on Sunday to the church where all the peasants were in the church, and they said, well, you prayed to God for bread, give us, oh, our Father who art in heaven, give us this day our daily bread. Did God give you any bread? No. You're still hungry. So why don't you ask us for bread? So they said, okay, communists, give us some bread. And then they'd roll out the bread. They had bread stock. So they said that, you see, this is practical. You're praying, but there's no bread. And you ask us, we're giving you bread. And in this way, they managed to convince many people that there's no need to believe in God, you should believe in communism. Of course, they didn't think that, well, where did the communists get the bread from? Ultimately, it's the gift of God. But generally, atheistic people, they like to say, well, let's be real. Science is something we can do, something we can improve the world with science. Whereas religion is just a big problem. Of course, that's highly debatable, but that's the kind of thing that people think, and that is the increasingly becoming the, or has become, the dominant worldview in much of the world, especially in Europe, not so much in America, which is culturally divided between people who believe that God created the world 6,000 years ago and people who don't believe that, who believe in more realistic things, whatever they mean by realistic. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada presented Krishna consciousness as being not only otherworldly, but this worldly. Otherworldly is a term that non-religious people often use to dismiss religion. Oh, it's just concerned with some other world. We never saw it, heard of it, it's just some imagination. One response of that of religious people is to be this worldly and open hospitals and schools and cooperate with communists in Latin America. We have to do something for the people, whoever they may be. Srila Prabhupada, he was very interested to institute Varnashram Dharma, not the caste system, but Varnashram Dharma, as an overall social system that won't solve all the problems of the world, because this world is meant to be a world of problems. It's designed like that. It is Dukhalayam Ashashvatam. Okay. Problem solving. Move the mic a little bit. So it's Varnashram Dharma does not purport to solve all the problems. That can be solved by Krishna consciousness. But it is a social system based on mutual cooperation in the service of Krishna, which is meant to best utilize each person's propensities and abilities, and to have a non-competitive society. So that was Srila Prabhupada's overall solution for social problems. That must be a Krishna-conscious society. And Krishna-conscious itself is the solution to all problems. Because what are the problems? Well, the main problem is forgetfulness of Krishna. And Krishna consciousness means remembrance of Krishna. Smartavya satatam Vishnu. Vismartavya na jatu chit. All our, which means we should always think of Krishna and never forget Krishna. All our problems stem from forgetting Krishna. Krishna bhuli se jivanadi bahimuk atayev mayatare daya shangshara duk. All our problems can be described as shangshara duk, the miseries of material existence. And the cause of that is Krishna bhuli, forgetting Krishna. Then we become inimical to Krishna. And therefore, maya awards us material suffering. So the solution is to remember Krishna. So Krishna consciousness is itself, it's the solution to our real problem. The main problem we have is forgetfulness of Krishna. That is the root cause of all other problems. And Krishna consciousness solves that. But what we can say practically in the world also. This is not impractical, but people ask, well, what about psychological problems what are the main problems facing America today? Terrorism? Does anyone still believe that? Terrorism? Is it still considered a major problem? Most people are struggling to pay the bills, as they say. In Florida, I saw a poster, a billboard, saying that one child in five in America goes hungry. We used to think that would be one in five in India or Bangladesh or places in Africa, but in America. So poverty is a major problem. People don't have money, enough money to meet their basic needs. And that, you may think, well, that's someone else's problem, but it becomes your problem because you have to pay the taxes to give them food stamps. And you have to arrange some security system so that these people who want the things that you have don't just decide to, or they're not able to, or you're trying to prevent them from just forcefully stealing those things. So poverty is a problem facing America. Some people perceive Islam as a problem, not so much now. There's a lot of ranting and raving about Islamic terrorism, but that seems to have died down. Marital problems. If people at all decide to get married, then they usually don't remain married. Yesterday in Washington Square Park, during the Rathi, the celebrations, or the festival after Rathi Yatra, we saw at one side of the park a marriage, was clearly a marriage party. And most of the participants, including the bride and groom, looked like they were over 40 years old, which suggested that for both of the newlyweds, it wasn't the first time they were getting married. It's quite usual to get married more than once. And then there are cultural problems by which there's a cultural divide by which some people think men should not marry men and women should not marry women, and they're very much against that. And then there are others who are very much for that. You shouldn't be against this. You should let everyone do what they like as long as it doesn't harm anyone else. So many, that's an ideological problem which translates into the whole society that we live in. And that comes into education also, because what will be taught in schools? Some people say it should be taught in schools that homosexuality is very good. some people are very much against that. So, Srila Prabhupada, he posited Krishna consciousness as a solution to all problems. Because Krishna consciousness is based on knowledge, actual knowledge of the meaning of existence and the purpose of life. Therefore, we can deal with such apparently unsolvable questions as should homosexuality be promoted or not? According to the liberal, agnostic, atheistic outlook, or maybe even some religionist thinks it's all right to do so. But then, if we understand what is the purpose of human life, why are we here? What are we supposed to be doing? Everything should be based on that understanding. Now, different people may give different ideas about that. Yesterday, when I was taking questions on the questions and answers booth at the festival, someone gave the question that, well, what do we say to Christians who insist that Jesus is the only way? And I replied, there's not really much use saying anything to them because they're not going to listen anyway. But if anyone is interested to listen, we can tell them that Sri Krishna's approach in presenting Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna is very different to that which we find in different faiths. Generally, that was another question. Someone asked me, do you believe in, I can't remember what it was, but the whole question, do you believe in, it's a very flimsy platform because you may believe in something and it's wrong. So simply to believe is not a substantial platform. Someone believes one thing, someone believes something else, and they fight over it, but you don't know. Just like I gave the example, as I've many times given, that I was raised in a Catholic family, and in the Catholic school we learned that if you don't believe in the Pope, you go to hell. And on the Protestant school, they teach that if you do believe in the Pope, you go to hell. And there's no intelligent way of understanding which is correct, if either of them are correct. But Krishna's approach in Bhagavad Gita is quite different. He doesn't tell Arjuna, listen Arjuna, just shut up and do what I say, otherwise you'll burn in hell forever. He says, just try to understand. Again and again, Krishna says, listen, hear what I have to say. Maya sakta manav partha yogam yunjan madashaya sangshayam samagrangma yatha gyasisi tach trinu. Krishna tells Arjuna, O Arjuna, with your mind attached to me, maya sakta manav partha, being, taking shelter of me in yoga, being linked with me in yoga, you hear from me, and you will be free from all doubts. So Krishna, he convinced Arjuna why Arjuna should fight. Arjuna was concerned with dharma. Krishna taught him the very basis of dharma, or the highest dharma.
What's going on there? The door's opening and closing.
The highest dharma is to understand Krishna and surrender to Krishna. So we have to understand. Krishna explained to Arjuna, we are not the body. We're changing from body to body to body. This whole situation of changing from body to body to body is miserable. Therefore, we have to take shelter of Krishna. And life should be molded in that way, as Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to the Manmana Bhava Madbhakta verse, that life should be molded in such a way that one cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day. So this is the purpose of life, and it can be reasonably understood. Krishna speaks on the platform of intelligence to Arjuna. Srila Prabhupada presented Krishna consciousness in an intelligent manner. He wanted people to, as Krishna wanted Arjuna to, Srila Prabhupada wanted the intelligent people of the world to understand why we should practice Krishna consciousness.
Could we stop this? People coming in and out all the time. He's going to lock that door.
The Srila Prabhupada wanted that intelligent people of the world understand this. He wanted to create a class of brahmanas, people who are conversant with Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangasya Jayate, with the science of Krishna consciousness, the science of God, by which one is freed from all problems. It's become something of a ritual in our movement. People get initiated, and after a little time, they get what's called Brahmin initiation. But Srila Prabhupada actually wanted people who are living as Brahmanas, that means not being paid in a job, and who are fully dedicated to spiritual cultivation, and who can, by their character and by their knowledge, can convince others of the efficacy of Krishna consciousness. So all the problems of the world can be solved by Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada, he asked one of his disciples to write a book showing how Krishna consciousness can solve all the problems. And sometimes he asked his disciples, okay, tell me what are the problems and I'll give you the answers. So at that time, it's around 1974 or something like this, there was what was called the petrol crisis. Nowadays, it's not considered a crisis because it's just ongoing all the time. But that was the first time when the oil-producing countries decided to restrict production and the prices went up, and then the whole world economy started to shake and petrol became scarce. So there was the petrol crisis. So devotees posited that what is the Krishna conscious solution to the petrol crisis? Srila Prabhupada's answer was, don't use petrol. It's not required. You don't need to drive here and there. And when you buy fruit, here in America, if you buy fruit, it's come from an average of 500 miles, approximately. Interesting fact, which I learned yesterday. It's not required. Produce what you need locally. And the devotee said, well, what if you want to go somewhere? And Prabhupada said, no need to go anywhere. What do you need to go anywhere for? By Krishna's arrangement, anywhere in the world, that was the way it was all over the world until recently. All over the world, all needs were provided for locally. And some things which you might not get locally, well, there were traveling merchants who would bring them around, things. But for most people, there was no need to travel. Why have such a complex society at all? So Srila Prabhupada was promoting this. Communities in which devotees live and produce their own food, simple living and high thinking. And that's also the solution to stress and social decay and so many things. Just live simply, and that will solve the financial problem also, because if you produce locally everything you need, then you don't need money either. We have a Srila Prabhupada proposed a society in which most people earn nothing. So we may say that's poverty, but if you have enough food and enough clothing, you don't need wardrobes full of clothing and a place to stay, then what more do you need? Srila Prabhupada is very radical in this way, but it appears that the world is going that way anyway, as the oil is going to run out. And then we'll be back to, we'll have all these big freeways, and there might be two or three times a day someone comes clopping past on a horse, and the freeways will just gradually become overrun with weeds. If there's no oil, then the whole present system breaks down, as that's already a big problem for the world, the supply of oil, which is why the Western countries are taking so much interest in places like Iran and Iraq. Why so much interest in Iran and Iraq? Well, it's a three-letter word, beginning with O and ending with L, and you can guess what the middle letter is. Because the whole modern civilization, for want of a better term, is dependent on oil. So, Srila Prabhupada recommended that. Returning to a simple life is a solution to so many problems in and of itself. You may think, well, it creates problems. For instance, we have air conditioning here, which also creates more pollution problems. So without that, it would be less comfortable. So yeah, we have to have a little discomfort. You can get used to that. Most people in the world, there are many people living in this area before the days of air conditioning. And actually, it's not so hot outside that air conditioning is required, but the building is set up like that. It's set up to have air conditioning. Otherwise, you could just open the windows and let some natural air come in, and you could get used to that. But we're accustomed to air conditioning. But it's not required. And even the rainy season is just beginning in India, so it's been another hot, hot summer. But people live through it, as they've lived through it through for hundreds and thousands of years, and will continue to do so. So a little tolerance of a discomfort. Matra sparshas tukauntaya shita ushna sukha dukha daha agama payana nityas tangsa tikshas vabhat. We should tolerate heat and cold. They come and go. Making elaborate arrangements for making the temperature cooler in the summer and warmer in the winter. The elaborate arrangements means we have to have a whole Ugra karmic arrangement. Ugra karma means gross industries which pollute the world, and people have to live and work in horrible, unhealthy conditions, have to work hard. It's better just to live simply. No, just to have this little comfort of having some cool air, which is also actually very unhealthy, using air conditioning, then we, for the sake of that, we have to work so hard. And although probably most of you here are what could be considered middle class, so you have a somewhat more comfortable existence, but then most of the people of the world in the modern age live a very miserable life to facilitate the people in America, actually, to get those McDonald's hamburgers. There are so many people in South America, for instance, whose traditional land, they've been driven off it to produce mass agricultural activities. And so whole populations are reduced to abject poverty just so that people in America can live comfortably. So it's also not very fair. So all kinds of things, like marital problems. How can that be overcome? By Krishna consciousness. It makes it difficult in the modern age when the whole ethos is one of sense gratification. So people think that marriage is also for sense gratification, and that's why people get married two times, three times, four times, because when they think, well, actually, I don't like this wife, or I don't like this husband. And they say, well, why don't I get another one? And so they divorce and marry again. But in Krishna consciousness, the outlook is different, that we don't, marriage is not meant for sense gratification, it's meant for executing dharma. Therefore, the wife is known as sahadharmani, one with whom one performs dharma, or dharma patni, religiously married wife. And there's a whole code of acting and cooperating together. And of course, the marriages are arranged, which is considered something horrible in the Western world, because you're supposed to have the liberality, the freedom to choose who you fall in love with. But although they think it's much better, we see that those who fall in love, they usually fall out of love. So it's not really love anyway, whereas the emphasis in the Vedic system is on responsibility, that cooperatively we have to serve Krishna, or even those within the Vedic system who don't directly follow Krishna consciousness, there's a sense of responsibility. But in the modern age, there's so much emphasis on rights and very little on duty. And so everyone is interested in, generally everyone's interested in themselves. And marriage is something that they enter into because they think they will be happy. This person will make me happy. Which, of course, the husband has to see that, has to try to make the wife happy, and the wife has to make the husband happy. But the main principle is to execute Krishna consciousness, or to follow dharma. It is a sacred union and is not to be broken. There should be no law allowing divorce. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce the Varnashram system with all the rules and regulations which are there, and also not just the rules and regulations, but the whole understanding that goes with it, that human life is meant for the purpose of God realization. It's only short. We're not here very long. So the main thing is not how we enjoy this world, but how we understand that it's not a place for enjoyment, and we're meant to get out of it, and that's how we're supposed to pass our life. Labdva sudurlabham idam bahu sambhavante manusham arthatam anityam apihadhira turnam yatetanapatedanu mritya yavan vishayakalu sarvatasyat nishrayasaya vishayakalu sarvatasyat. The human life is exceptional among all the species of life, because it's only, this is the, I'm now giving a rough translation of that verse. Human life is very valuable. It's superior to other life forms, because in this life form we can understand, we have sufficient intelligence to understand what is the purpose of life and how to execute that. But human life is also very short. Now we have it. After many, many births, we have attained a human birth. So, Krishna, who speaks this verse, actually it's spoken by Dattatreya to Prahlad Maharaj, and then Krishna repeats that when speaking to Uddhava. So he says, Krishna says that, okay, so you got this human life, it's very valuable, but it's very short, but one should utilize this human life in such a way that before one's inevitable death, one prepares oneself so he will not have to be born again. And if you think, well, there are so many things to enjoy, well, okay, but you can do that in every other species of life. We've already done it. Now we should be serious about God realization. And it's this focus which, at the individual level and at the social level, solves all problems. It doesn't mean that it won't be hot sometimes. It doesn't mean it won't be cold sometimes. It doesn't mean that everyone immediately becomes perfect and then we live in perfect harmony. There will be discord even among devotees, as you may have noticed if you've been a member or involved with devotees for some time. In this Kali Yuga, even among devotees, there is discord. But because the goal of life is more than our own petty little sense gratification, we have such a higher goal to practice and to preach Krishna consciousness. And because there are guidelines in how to do that, not overly complicating our life, making clearly the goal of life Krishna consciousness, then that will automatically solve so many problems. Most of our problems are manasijam. They're born of the mind. I need a new, and then whatever it is. I have to get something, you have to buy something. Well, most of the things we think we need, we don't need. And if we give up desires for having so many things, then automatically the mind becomes peaceful. Krishna bhakta nishkam ataiv shanta. Because the devotee does not have material desires, therefore he's peaceful. People who have material desires, they cannot be peaceful. Because kama esha, krodha esha, rajoguna samudbhavaha. Material desire is born of the mode of passion. And from material desire comes anger or frustration. So one cannot be peaceful if one is in rajoguna. So to be peaceful in mind, one at least has to come to sattvaguna, in which one is detached from material enjoyment. This is meant for everyone. It's meant for householders also. If we're actually to advance in Krishna consciousness, we can't be materialistic and properly advance in Krishna consciousness at the same time. We can be devotees, but we can't properly advance. If we conceive of ourselves as enjoyers of this material world, that very thought or that very self-identification, abhiman, that is opposite to the thought that I am meant for serving Krishna. Atendriya priti vancha tare bale kam, Krishnendriya priti icha dhare premana. Krishna prem means that to have no other desire than to satisfy Krishna's transcendental senses, to act only for the pleasure of Krishna. And material desire or material consciousness means to think in terms of one's own sense enjoyment. So maybe in the neophyte stage we can think of dovetailing the two, but really Krishna consciousness means to act only for the pleasure of Krishna. That can be done fully in householder life, but it requires the consciousness of vairagya vidya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preached bhakti, vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga. One should be knowledgeable of the purpose of life, of the science of Krishna consciousness, and one should cultivate a sense of detachment from this world. That doesn't mean being irresponsible in family life, but it means that clearly surrender to Krishna is the goal of our life. So Srila Prabhupada's proposition, along with spreading the holy name of Krishna and distributing these books and giving this knowledge, was to actually reorganize all of society in a manner that is actually beneficial for it. At the present time, the way society is set up, it's not beneficial for everyone. Materially, it benefits a very few people. A few people, they live at the expense of many others. But even the people who are at the top of the pile, they're also not benefited, because in ignorance of the actual goal of life, in ignorance of their real nature as servants of Krishna, they're miserable. As Ambarish Prabhu, disciple of Srila Prabhupada, Alfred Ford, he said that growing up or being born into a family of the super rich, from an early age he understood that wealth does not bring happiness or satisfaction, and that super rich people, which the non-super rich want to become super rich, there's no advantage. One is not happy at all. So he perceived that. And of course, that's a fact. Money doesn't bring happiness. Comfort, maybe. Some sense of prestige, or some false sense of well-being, but money can't save us from janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, birth, death, old age and disease. And even in our present life, present existence, it can't save us from adhyatmik, adhibhautik, and adhidaivik klesh, miseries pertaining to our body and mind, miseries inflicted on us by others, and natural, what we call natural miseries. And we find that even people who have all arrangements, due to having enough money, they have all arrangements for material happiness. They are often the most miserable due to adhyatmik duk, their own mind, by which they feel very disturbed if someone has, even if they themselves are super rich, they're very disturbed if someone is even more superly rich than themselves. And therefore we find the big rich people of the world who could retire today and spend $1 million every day for the rest of their life and still die rich. They're busily working, trying to get more money. Why? They're just driven by greed and the sense of power. No, it's madness. So, Krishna consciousness is the solution for all problems. And the main problem is forgetfulness of Krishna, which manifests as birth, death, old age and disease and suffering in 8,400,000 species of life. Krishna consciousness is the solution to all problems. And if the people of the world take it up, then even in this miserable Kali Yuga, people can live relatively peacefully and happily. We can't expect in the material world that it will be exactly like Vaikuntha in all respects. But at least people can live much more happily than at the present time. If we want to choose one word which characterizes modern civilization, we could use the word unhappiness. One term that covers it all. No one is happy. So people can live happily and peacefully in Krishna consciousness. But we practically find that Krishna consciousness in some ways creates problems also. Often when people come to Krishna consciousness, they find they have a whole new set of problems in the form of their family members who are not happy at all that they are in Krishna consciousness. It becomes very difficult for them. As last night at the park, at the program, when Chinese young lady came up to me and said, "What do I do? I like Krishna consciousness. I'm just taking to it, but my family," and the Chinese family means more tight-knit than Indian families, I would think. Very, very heavy. Chinese people tend to be very intense and heavy. And so all my family members are against me. I can't imagine going against my family, and I can't imagine giving up Krishna consciousness either. What do I do? Well, what do you advise in such a situation? You may say that, well, you can't imagine giving up your family, but whether you can imagine it or not, you're going to have to at some point, by the influence of time, you can't remain in that Chinese family forever. Various members of that family will die, and you will also die. So, first thing to understand is, I am not Chinese. It's easy for Indian people to understand that, but it's not easy for them to understand that I am not Indian and I am not the body. So, that's the first thing to understand. But practically, you're surrounded by relatives who are not favorable to one's Krishna consciousness. And of course, that's common in Indian families also, in many cases. That all of a sudden, your loving friends and relatives don't seem to love you so much, or they may be ready to reject you even for taking to Krishna consciousness. So that's one kind of problem. As a society, as a, this movement, it may be seen as antisocial. In the 1970s especially, there was lots of opposition to this movement in America. And then later on in the 1980s and 90s, in the erstwhile USSR, and practically wherever this movement is propagated widely, in the beginning, there's much opposition. In India also, when Srila Prabhupada was first propagating his, when he first brought Western devotees, many people were very happy to see them. Many people were very unhappy. My personal experience in India in the 1970s, many people would tell me that you can't be a Hindu, you have to be born a Hindu. And I tell them, well, thanks. I never wanted to be a Hindu. I didn't aim to be a Hindu. My aim is to understand what is the ultimate purpose of life, and we don't find anywhere in Shastra that there's any such word Hindu even. So that's also some mundane designation. But many people were opposed that how can these lechers, how can they be Hindus and Brahmins and sannyasis? This Bhaktivedanta Swami is spoiling Hinduism. So there was opposition there also. And from another side in India, there was a lot of propaganda that these Westerners are coming to India. They're actually CIA operatives, which wasn't a very intelligent proposition, because you think that the CIA operatives would want to operate clandestinely, but for a Westerner to walk around with the shaved head and shikhar and tilak in bright orange robes, it doesn't give much chance for operating secretly. And also, it would be difficult for any real CIA follower, or anyone for that matter, to follow those principles of no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. But there was opposition. And actually, if we push on Krishna consciousness as Srila Prabhupada wanted it, we can expect more opposition. Srila Prabhupada said that opposition is the sign of our success. If we're actually pushing on Krishna consciousness as Srila Prabhupada did very aggressively, we can expect there will be much opposition. It came to the attention of some members of the American public that Srila Prabhupada was opposed to the idea of women's liberation. So there were some interviews with Srila Prabhupada by all women TV crews. And Prabhupada said, he didn't back down. He said that, yeah, women, they by nature, they have to be dependent on men. That's the natural order. They have children, they're supposed to look after their children, they have to be dependent on the man. The women didn't like it at all. Prabhupada became very unpopular for that, but he didn't back down. He pushed on aggressively this book distribution. So if we actually push on Krishna consciousness, as Srila Prabhupada wanted us to do, then we can expect much opposition. But there will be many people who also appreciate. Nowadays, we're not so aggressive and we don't have the problem of opposition, but we have another problem that people don't even know we exist. So we solve one problem of, you could say we solve the problem of being unpopular by going completely off the radar, just as if we're non-existent. So, actually, if we preach Krishna consciousness, as you see, that, as Srila Prabhupada did, pointing out that this so-called civilization is just a sophisticated arrangement of cats and dogs. This was the kind of language that Srila Prabhupada used, and people considered it very insulting. But if we think about it, it is actually insulting to the cats and the dogs, who are not as degraded as the humans. It's actually a compliment to the humans to call them cats and dogs, because the cats and dogs are not so degraded. But it's just making the point that people are unintelligent, and they have no higher purpose of life than the cats and the dogs than to simply gratify their senses. So people become upset if they hear this, but actually it's a fact. People are living only for sense gratification. There's this idea that America is the most advanced civilization in history because it gives everyone the opportunity to pursue personal happiness. But that's not advanced civilization, that's what the animals do. How is it advanced? Advanced civilization means that very deeply thoughtful, understanding what is the purpose of life and organizing society in that way. A society can be said to be advanced if there is sense control, not sense indulgence. But is there any idea of sense control in this country? I don't think so. If there is, it's coming from Srila Prabhupada's teachings. So without sense control, then people are just like animals. And if we say that, people get upset. But what can we do? The truth should be spoken. So those who practice Krishna consciousness, they can expect problems also. Individually, people may oppose them. And then if we have to speak the truth, we can't. To preach Krishna consciousness means we have to tell all these things to people, as Srila Prabhupada did. There may be some tact also, but tact doesn't mean avoiding the issue. So some people will get upset, undoubtedly. But so we have to live with that. The life of a preacher of Krishna consciousness cannot be an easy life. We have to expect opposition. So Krishna consciousness is problem-solving, but many people will see it as problematic, and they will want to make problems for devotees who want... Devotees act for the benefit of others, but people who think that to exploit others and to exploit animals and kill them in the slaughterhouses, that's just normal and right and proper, they won't like this. Yesterday also in the questions and answers, someone asked that, well, why does God allow people like Hitler and Stalin to kill so many people? And I said in reply, why are you singling out Hitler and Stalin? You're also part of a civilization that's killing literally millions of animals and birds and fishes daily. They also suffer. We are the... By causing such suffering to others, we are arranging, we are setting ourselves up to suffer. Hitler and Stalin, they're only instruments, but we, Purusha Sukha Dukkhanam Bhoktritve Hetu Ruchyate, we ourselves are the cause of our own suffering in this world. Some may say, well, they're just animals, what does it matter? Well, that's what Hitler said, they're just Jews, what does it matter? Insensitivity to others' suffering, we just take it as normal. So we have to point these things out. What goes on in America every day is simply setting this country up for extremely severe reactions. We should tell people. They may not like to hear, but we should warn them. At least that's our duty. And many people will object. The meat eaters will object. The owners of the meat factories, they will object. They may object, not just object verbally, they may want to give so many problems. They may want to kill the devotees. They're already accustomed to killing animals, so and killing humans also. Killing humans, so much death is caused. So much suffering is caused by their policies. So we should push on preaching of Krishna consciousness, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, understanding Srila Prabhupada's message, giving it to others, giving them the knowledge by which they can solve all the problems of life and how the world can be saved from what Srila Prabhupada called its disaster course. But then we ourselves have to be prepared to accept the burden of a preacher as Srila Prabhupada did. Srila Prabhupada himself took so much difficulty so that we could take to Krishna consciousness. So we should be prepared to repay that by ourselves taking up this mission of seriously practicing and seriously preaching Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Any questions about this, please? Who has a question? You have a question? Why don't you come here so I can see you? Just come here so I can see you. It's a bit funny asking a question from out there somewhere. Just come here.
There are two questions, Maharaj. One is based on your problems within ISKCON and the outside ISKCON, based on the realizations one have, right? It will be it's the subjective to one's understanding, right? In that subjective matter, how do we accept and progress? It is whether within ISKCON, okay?
No, I don't understand what you're talking about.
Okay, the first question is that how to accept if any devotee or a non-devotee have any subjective difference in one's perspective.
How do we understand subjective difference? Well, we have a standard. We have the teachings of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. That is the standard by which everything should be judged. The whole idea of everyone's subjective opinion being as good as any other, that's not what we follow. Then you have to go to the Ramakrishna Mission, Jato Mot Toto Pot. All paths are the same, all opinions are the same, but that's not the path of understanding actual reality. What Krishna says, that is correct, that is Shastra, we have to understand that through the medium of Guru and Sadhu. So there is some ground for subjectivity, but the background, the solid basis are the teachings of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Everything should be understood on that basis.
So will it not differ based on a perspective? Whatever, as Prabhupada also stated, according to Shastra, a person can take what he needs or what he understands, or that may differ with what he...
Really? Which statement is that exactly? Could you quote it?
Any person.
Srila Prabhupada said you can take what you understand according to your need. Could you give the exact statement that Srila Prabhupada said? I don't know which one you're referring to.
No, I'm not talking about Srila Prabhupada said, Maharaj.
But you just said Srila Prabhupada.
No, whatever.
You just said it. You just said that Srila Prabhupada said that a person can take what they need according to their understanding. Please give me the quote.
No, I'm not telling what Prabhupada said, Maharaj. Well,
then how can I reply to you if you say one thing and then you say something else? You know, it's like
I'm saying
trying to play ping pong blind or something.
Devotee's perspective.
Devotee's perspective is Shastra Chakshu, through the eye of Shastra.
So he takes what he wants. That's what my
point. No, that's your point. You're wrong.
Yeah,
a devotee doesn't take what he wants. Devotee submits himself to a guru and takes what he's given.
Yeah.
So you go back to ABC and try and understand. We are not the arbiters of truth. Krishna, he understands. The idea that I think I know and therefore I should do what I like, that is the very reason we're suffering in this material world. We have to take knowledge from Krishna as received through the parampara. And if we approach Krishna consciousness in that way also, well, I'll take what I like, then we're not in Krishna consciousness. We have to stop thinking in terms of what I think, I know so well, I know what's best, and understand that I need to be guided. Is there another mic? No. Well, you don't have to. I can hear, and I'll repeat the question because you'd have to shout to be heard way over there. Yeah.
Maharaj, as you said that we are insensitive to others' suffering, but when we eat plants, plants might also.
We are insensitive to others' suffering. So what about eating plants? Okay, it's a frequently asked question. The law of the material world is jivo jivasya jivanam. This world is set up like that, that one living being lives on another living being. Much of the plant food that we eat does not involve killing even the plant. For instance, grains are harvested after the plant has died. Fruit is taken from the tree without killing the tree. Milk is taken from the cow without causing any harm to the cow. So much of plant food and dairy food is taken without violence. Some plants are killed in the course of taking them for eating. The Bhagavatam gives us understanding, jivo jivasya jivanam, one living being lives on another. And the Bhagavatam also states that a devotee should live by the principle of nati hingsa, not excessive violence. Some violence is unavoidable. Nevertheless, there is, even if we, for instance, kill a carrot plant by uprooting it, because the consciousness of that living being is far less developed than that of, for instance, a cow or a goat, there's less sinfulness connected with eating carrots than there is with eating the flesh of animals. Nevertheless, it is also sinful to eat anything, or even to take milk or grains. If we take it simply for our own enjoyment, we should offer to Krishna. Then everything becomes purified. Yes, please. It's very nice. What did you like about it? What did you think was very nice about it? Yeah, important point, isn't it? How Prabhupada he didn't compromise, but he, Srila Prabhupada, it wasn't like he was a rabble-rouser or a revolutionary just for the sake of being a revolutionary. He wanted to do good to others. And to do good to others, sometimes or often it's necessary, because people are so ignorant of what they actually need, it's often necessary to act in a way which they perceive as being inimical to them, but actually it's for their own self-interest. I've covered that in a book called On Speaking Strongly in Srila Prabhupada's Service. Anyway, what's your question? Samaveda, nothing to do with Samaveda. It's nothing to do with Rik Sama Yajur, nothing like that. Samaveda means assembled. It's not Atharva Veda Bhakta Vrinda or Yajur Veda Bhakta Vrinda. Samaveda, Veda means all here together. In English, all glories to the assembled devotees. What should be our approach to the Muslims? Well, the first thing is, it's a very good idea to approach them and not ignore them, because they're also living beings in need of Krishna's mercy. And if anyone really wants to get a lot of mercy from Srila Prabhupada and the Parampara, they can approach Muslims and try to bring them into Krishna consciousness. Our approach, Srila Prabhupada, when instructing devotees on how to preach in Muslim countries, he told them to teach the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, beginning with Dehino Sminyata Dehe Kaumarang Yovanang Jara Tata Dehantara Praptihi. That the body is always changing, but the person stays the same. Therefore, we can understand that when the body dies, we get another body. We don't die, we're eternal. So Srila Prabhupada said you should preach in this scientific way and say that this is not a Hindu belief. It's not that only the Hindus get born and they grow older. It happens to everyone. So we can understand that this principle is applicable to everyone. Srila Prabhupada also, he would sometimes say that it's not necessary to stop being a Muslim or a Christian. You can continue like that, but you should follow properly what are the teachings, and with emphasis on chanting the names of God. But I would think that that would be a beginning stage, and then gradually we'd have to introduce the four principles of dharma that are required for anyone who considers themselves religious. That means cleanliness, mercy, truthfulness, and austerity, which means animal killing has to go out. But anyone who is religious will agree, yes, these are principles that we should follow. Truthfulness, cleanliness, austerity, and mercy. And then if we point out that, it's not very merciful to kill the animals, then people, if they're honest, they will accept that. Some Muslims are very aggressive. Yes, that's true. Some non-Muslims are also very aggressive. It's not a monopoly of Muslims, but it's often seen that some Muslims are very aggressive. That's true, but it's a challenge. It's a great challenge, no doubt. But it's not that all Muslims are fanatically against Krishna consciousness. Not at all. I just saw some recently in the latest version of the Veda base, which is all the collected teachings of Srila Prabhupada. I recently saw some reviews by scholars appreciating Srila Prabhupada's books. These were collected in the 1970s. They've been included in the latest release. And there's a very nice review by a Muslim professor. I believe he was at Aligarh Muslim university. So he gave a very nice review. And you wouldn't believe that it was, you'd think it was a Hindu writing it if you read it. So now I'm going to, I'm scheduled to leave tomorrow from New York to Bombay. I'm heading to India for the Rathiatra season, because we around that season we have, it's supposed to be on a particular day, but because we only have so many members in our movement, and we have Rathiatras on slightly different days in different places in Gujarat. So in Baroda, I've been attending almost every year in Baroda for about 20 years or something. And it's a huge turnout. About the police estimate every year is 2 lakhs to 3 lakhs turnout. And it just seems to get more and more every year. One of the most notable parts is that we go through 2 Muslim areas. And in both the areas, the leaders of the community come out, come on the rat, offer aarti to Jagannath, offer sweets and everything, take garlands and like that. So that's, and they have a big sign that the such and such area Muslim youth group welcomes Jagannath Rathiatra and this and that. So in Arnand also, we have the Rathiatra and we go through a Muslim area and the local Muslims come out. And so it's not necessarily that all Muslims are against.
There used to be one poet during the time of Akbar in India.
There used to be a Muslim poet, yeah.
Abdul Rahman Khan Kana.
There are many.
He has written, Manus ho to wahi ras kaanu.
There are many. Actually, I asked one of my disciples to make a whole book. He's almost finished compiling it, called Muslim Devotees of Krishna. More recently, there was in Bengal the Qazi Nazrul Islam, who he obviously by his name is Muslim, but he wrote many songs and praise of Krishna, and he wrote many poems, very respected in Bengal, many poems saying that we're all worshipping the same God. He married a Brahmo wife, which is more or less a Hindu. And he had 2 sons. One of them he called Muhammad Krishna, and the other one, I can't remember, something Ram, Rahman Ram, or something like that. So, yeah, like that. There have been throughout history. There's many. In Puri is famous, Shalabeg, who was called a Muslim, but actually he was a great devotee of Jagannath. His samadhi is there. So, that's a great challenge. Whoever wants to promote that, you'll get a lot of mercy. You can do it in America also. You can order Urdu Bhagavad Gitas and give them to members of the Muslim community, for instance. And of course, there are so many other, apart from Urdu, there are many Iranians. We have Bhagavad Gita in Farsi, the national language of Iran. So I don't know on this side of America, but in Los Angeles there's a large Iranian community. Among all the Muslim people, it seems that the Iranians are most open to Krishna consciousness. And in the Muslim areas of the ex-USSR also, there are many people who are devotees. So, it's a suggestion. Here in America, you can distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. In English also, of course. To Muslims. That'll be a great service if you can do that. You can say, we're also Muslims. Islam means surrender to God, so that's exactly what we're presenting also. I don't see it in Srila Prabhupada, and I don't think it'll be very successful to adopt a very inimical kind of attitude. It might be necessary sometimes to protect, just like during those riots. When was that? In Gujarat in 2002. Yeah, so. Yeah, but I was just going to say that then we had, in our temples, we had extra security and this and that. But I don't think that taking a very aggressive role will do us any good. It won't help to spread Krishna consciousness. That will rather exacerbate some bodily conscious Hindu versus Muslim thing. But we want to present Krishna consciousness as a universal science by which everyone can understand who we are, who is God, and what is our relationship. Anyway, that's another big discussion in itself.
Just to augment what you were saying, Maharaj, a lot of Muslim people do take books on book distribution. And one of the Mataji's Kila Kinshita in Kansas City, she was driving and she saw a devotee and a dhoti walking around in the streets. She became curious. She's
from a Muslim background.
She used to wear the burqa all the time. She used to come and do service to the temple in Muslim burqa and all that.
Yeah. In Dhaka, in Bangladesh, our center is there, our temple. And we see women in burqas come in, bow down, and men you can't tell because they're Hindus and Muslims. There, some Muslims in the city also dress in lungi, but then some Hindus do also. But in our programs in Bangladesh, there are many, mostly Hindus come, but we know that Muslims must be also coming. So we always start off by saying that. By saying that our dear sadhan, respectable persons, brothers, mothers, our Muslim brothers, like this. So in this way we welcome everyone in the beginning. It's a standard thing we do in our programs, because we know that Muslims are going to come also out of curiosity or whatever. And they appreciate. In Bangladesh, our movement has been very successful among the Hindu community. And many Muslims are, and they respect it also, because they think that it's seriously following, seriously religious. So, and I lived in Bangladesh for several years. It's just a very common thing in the villages that have what we might call Muslim satsangs all night. And they'll be having prayers and speeches, and not fanatical speeches, saying how we have to dedicate our life to Allah and He is the one who's given us everything, and like this. I mean, genuinely religious people.
In Bangladesh, Maharaj, I am from Bangladesh, from Chittagong.
Mm.
So there is one Muslim family. They, every day, they come to Chittagong temple.
Which one?
Chittagong temple.
Which one? Prabhatak or?
Prabhatak. Mm. So they come again to take the blessings from Lord.
Yeah, there may be many, many like that. Yeah, we have Rath Yatra in the main street of Dhaka and in many towns. And the Muslim merchants also give donations, and they come and pull the rat, and ministers come and inaugurate. And so it's not impossible. There's a quote, although I'm not sure if he actually said it, but it's often heard that Srila Prabhupada had said that. I've often heard this said, but I don't know when Srila Prabhupada said, who he said it to, so it's maybe one of those, maybe Prabhupada said this. But apparently, or it is said that Srila Prabhupada said that whoever preaches in the Muslim countries, I take the dust off his feet on my head. Hare Krishna!